Meet Mrs. McSugal. Her memoir bears no resemblance whatsoever to real life. It is 100% fiction and fabrication, or, to put it bluntly, complete codswallop. Indeed, none of the public figures named will recognise one grain of truth in her farcical fibs and fantasies. This satirical monologue does not represent the views or actions of any person, living or dead.
Mrs. McSugal, Scotland's second finest actress.
You couldn't make it up, but she just did. Episode 3, Starry, Starry Night.
People are constantly asking me, Kiki Jean, who was your favourite guest? But I always say, how can I choose? Sir Elton John kept on at me. Am I your favourite, Kiki Jean? Am I? Please say it's me and not Nigel Havers. But God love him, and I do. I think it would have to be Benedict Cumberbatch. That man's neck is exquisite. One evening, I bent over to offer him a doily, and I had this overwhelming urge to bite it. But he got up to make himself an angel delight just in time. He's knelt from the front, of course, but walked round the back, and oh, my giddy aunt. When he left, I could not bring myself to wash his bath towel. I know what you're thinking, but I simply couldn't do it. Cilla Black said to me, sell it on eBay, Kiki Jean. You'll make a fortune. But I said, no, Cilla, tawdry Cilla. In the end, I added it to my little theatrical museum in the back hall. There are all sorts of memorabilia on display. Old Strathbogie programmes, a G-string worn by Gordon Jackson I found inside his Gideon Bible, and now Benedict's used towel. I hung it up and put a plaque beside it with an arrow showing the imprint of his wee bubble butt. I once got up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and caught Bob Hoskins having a good sniff of it. He was mortified, went scarlet red and said, honest Kiki Jean, I was just drawing my face. I smiled at him and said, of course you were, Bob. You enjoy yourself. But please don't block my rear passage. It's a fire hazard. Welcoming Britain's greatest living actor to my humble home was an honour I could never have expected, and Hannah Gordon did not disappoint. That woman could play any role, any age. Whoever could forget her tender performances in Upstairs, Downstairs and Watercolour Challenge? We bonded immediately. Two fine Scots actresses and two strong yet vulnerable women. And when she left, she held on to me with tears in her eyes. Thank you, Katie June, she said. We shall always be friends. I haven't heard from her since, but no doubt she's been busy shopping in Safeway and things. You'll be surprised to hear that some of my guests take advantage of my good nature. I was so warm and welcoming to Golden Girl B. Arthur when she flew in to do the whiskey trail. I loved your sitcom, I said. Thank you, she said. Donald Sinden was so funny in it, I said. Donald Sinden wasn't in it, she said. Well, the last time I looked he was, I said. He was your butler. That wasn't me, she said. Oh, who can it have been, I said. Elaine Stritch, she said. Oh, I love Elaine Stritch, I said. She's so funny. I'm B. Arthur, she said. Of course you are, dearie, I said. And weren't you wonderful in Rising Damp? I wasn't in that either, she said. Well, who the blazes was, I said. Frances de la Tour, she said. Oh, I love Frankie, I said. She's so talented. I could tell she was now getting seriously peed off. And I thought, for God's sake, Jeannie, think. What was this blasted woman in? Then I remembered reading how much she loathed lovely old Betty White. At last, something to go on. You were wonderful in the Mary Tyler Moore Show, I said. I wasn't in the Mary Tyler Moore Show, she said. I was the star of the Golden Girls. Of course you were, dearie, I said, not particularly liking her tone. And very good you were too. But didn't Betty White win the Emmy? And don't get me started on those musical theatre types. Where the hell is the off button? Look at me, Kiki Jean, I can do the splits. No, look at me, Kiki Jean, I can do a cartwheel. Well, after half an hour of I'm Gonna Live Forever, I had to have it out with Angela Lansbury. Heavens to Murgatroyd, knock it off, I said. You're nearly 90. Then the tears. Please don't shout at me, Kiki Jean. I'm an all-round entertainer and former Rear of the Year. And so is Germaine Greer, I said, and look what it got her. I blame Andrew Lloyd Webber myself. I adore that man, but I had to ask, Andy, why do you keep writing those dreary musicals with only one decent song that's sung over and over again? Everyone in the audience is sitting there praying to God for something, anything to happen. And to think he wrote Pie Jesu for that Sarah Brightman. When she played me the demo, I said, sweetie, it's exquisite, but it's simply crying out for a disco remix. We're talking I Lost My Heart to a Starship Trooper here. But did she listen? Did she backerack? And while Michael Ball may be every octogenarian's fantasy, why must he act out every word in Love Changes Everything like Lionel Blair on Heat? We know where our hands and faces are, laddie. I ended up turning to the lady next to me and asking her, do you think he's lost? No, just cheesy, she said. But did you know Barbara Dixon was the first leading lady in Blood Brothers? It's true, before all those greedy Nolan sisters got their paws on it. When she turned up on my doorstep, I was lost for words. Ye gods, you are aging gracefully, I said. That perm is timeless. And Morris will be fair made up, as he's a huge fan of your little folk ditties about living in a caravan in January and February. She apologised for not booking in advance and asked if I had room for a little one. Oh, did you bring Elaine Page? I said, pretending to search in her handbag. No, really, I said. You are welcome to my side-facing single if you don't mind nylon sheets. It's a full-time commitment being, and I quote from the stage, the oldest and dampest theatrical digs in Strathbogie. I pride myself on offering every home comfort to my actors. They're away from the wife and kids, often for a whole summer season, but at least they can enjoy the glorious Highland scenery and some nice horny flings with other members of the company. I'll never forget the sight of Burt Reynolds tiptoeing out of Burt Lancaster's room in a negligee. So that's what they mean by a Burt in the hand, I shouted after him. Didn't he laugh? For some, though, the strain is too much. I came down one morning to find darling Diana Riggs sobbing in that wicker chair. She was overdoing it, of course. 8 shows a week in Cameron McIntosh's New Balls, Please, the musical, playing a deeply complex character. The critics said it was the best portrayal of Sue Barker they'd ever seen. It was heartbreaking to see Di-Di sitting there, rocking back and forth, clutching her golden globe to her chest and wailing, anyone for tennis? Anyone for tennis? I said to her, I understand, lassie, for I have been there. Doc Martin left me traumatised for months. It's not every day one receives a call from the palace.
Her Royal Highness Princess Margaret wants a word, said the haughty wee man on the switchboard.
Big Mags, I said, what does she want?
But he put me on hold, and after listening to We're in the Money on an endless loop, he finally put her through.
I'm looking to book a spa break, she said.
Well, I didn't think you'd be working, I said.
But I'm fully booked, and even if I had a room, I am a strictly no-smoking establishment.
Cue a chilly silence and a sharp intake of breath somewhere in Kensington.
Joan Collins was allowed to smoke, came the retort. Why can't I? Because she's Joan Collins, I said. And I'm Princess Margaret, came the voice down the line. Means nothing to me, love, I said. And with that, I sent my regards to Tony Armstrong-Jones and I replaced the receiver. Tony took a stunning photo of me when I was just starting out as an actress. Topless, but very tasteful, on a parky day at the Oban ferry terminal.
I'm very glad to say the Princess and I made it up when we both attended the opening night of Scottish Ballet's lavish Trainspotting 3. Big Mags, I said, let's let bygones be bygones. We'll nip back to mine and act out Abigail's party. I'll even let you be Alison Steadman. That convinced her. We tried to creep out unnoticed, but unfortunately Margot Fonteyn spotted us as she pirouetted across the stage with Johnny Lee Miller. It was kind of her to attempt to incorporate an impromptu curtsy into the already crowded choreography, but the wee scone ended up toppling arse over elbow into the pit, landing on a furious first clarinet, with the giant needle sticking out of her arm, suddenly shooting up, up in the air, in slow motion like a javelin. We watched in horror as it rose high above our heads and finally came in to land on Wayne's sleep, snoozing at the back of the dress circle. I heard the evening never did get back on track after that. We were glad to get home, and I quickly rustled up a few things on sticks and a makeshift cast from guests of very variable talents. There was me and Mags, Antonio Banderas, Rupert Everett and Cherie Blair, all sitting round in a circle clutching our scripts. Cherie had wanted an early night, but I banged on our bedroom door and said, "So, Tony, let your hair down, woman." And under my direction, she was perfect in the role of Sue. It still left us without a Lawrence, but we lucked out when Gary Barlow returned from the Take That concert early and said he'd happily step up. Gary is such a nice, well-brought-up young man, and he turned out to be surprisingly good at a northern accent. Princess Mag said she hadn't had so much fun since she and her sister dressed up as Hinge and Bracket, and no one noticed the difference. When I told the story to Susie Pluck, the less than impressive marketing manager at the Strathbogie Rep, she had the bright idea of a royal visit to boost the theatre's coffers. In fairness, I got her point. The reps have all gone, you see. There's only Strathbogie left. The rest have been consigned to the history books, along with Carol Smiley, although her impeccable oral hygiene lives on. The council were slashing their budgets, and June Whitfield and Una Stubbs hadn't really done the business in Kylie and Danny, sisters at war, despite Una bringing such depth to Danny's character. Quite a remarkable feat when you stop and think about it. Susie sounded so excited when she called to let me know that Holyrood Palace had confirmed a royal visit for July. "Will and Kate are coming. We're saved, Kiki Jean. We're saved." I'm ashamed to say my first thought was, why couldn't it have been the Waltons? But I was truly happy for her. Well, 2 weeks later, she's on the phone again, but it was like a different woman. "I can't believe it," she sobbed. "I'm absolutely devastated." "Oh, Petal, I'm so sorry," I said. "Don't say they've cancelled." "No," she said. "It's worse. They're sending Eddie and Sophie instead. We're doomed, Kiki Jean, we're doomed." I felt for her, I really did. But I was able to reassure her that Eddie was once a theatre type himself and certainly knew his way around a comedy of manners. So, there we were, all lined up in our finery, hands outstretched. And what a delightful evening it turned out to be. Duchess Sophie was so down to earth and chatted away, telling everyone how expensive her blouse was and laughing off Alan Bennett's confusion that she was in the only way is Essex. "No, we're from Wessex," she told him. "Only no one can find it on a map." Everyone laughed. When it was my turn to speak to Eddie, he asked me if I had enjoyed It's a Royal Knockout. "Well, what do you say?" I managed to cobble something together about it being an important forerunner to the Invictus Games and deftly changed the subject. "I've seen Kojak in his Speedos," I said, "and if I live to see the Seven Wonders of the World, they will never be what he showed me that night." Well, the next thing I know, the colour is draining from the prince's face and he's asking if someone would kindly bring him a glass of water. I assured him it was only the balmy Perthshire air and the excitement of meeting me, but it didn't seem to help. Then I noticed the artistic director of the theatre, Denzel Cowan, looking daggers at me, And before you know it, he's given our VIP a hefty shove down the line, saying, "Time is short, Your Highness. Let's move on. May I introduce the fragrant Miss Annie Lennox?" Denzil was a tad chilly with me for a while after that, but thankfully Strathbogie Rep is made of girders. What would our town be without the theatre? And where does a young actor hone his skills without the bosom of a rep company and an audience who don't get out much anymore? It's all Hollyoaks these days for the youngsters leaving drama school, and you'll only learn bad habits there. Cuts, cuts, cuts. The poor bleeding arts. When will they learn it's we actors who are the real lifesavers? What would have happened to all those overstressed, oversexed dads in the 70s without half an hour of Felicity Kendall to look forward to each week? They'd have pegged it years ago. Denzel feels very restricted in his choice of plays, as all they want round here are nice, safe Agatha Christies. No bad language, no lefty propaganda, no point, basically. Fortunately, he is constantly pushing the envelope, whatever that means. But the letters of complaint he receives from irate Strathbogie residents, I admire him for giving a platform to new writers, but last year's rough and muff in the buff led to the highest mortality rate in Greater Perthshire since 1897. I heard one old dear copped it the minute the curtain went up, and sitting centre stage on a sun lounger was a naked Kenneth Williams reading the Times and oiling his in-betweens. Personally, I loved it, and I kicked myself for not bringing my opera glasses, but my neighbour, Bunyan McTavish, wrote a stinging letter to Denzel about it. "How could you humiliate a fine British actor in this way?" she said. Denzel wrote back that Kenny seemed to be having the time of his life, and anywho, how could someone who'd appeared in Carry On Dick ever be humiliated? I had it out with her over our rotary clothes dryers. "You wouldn't be complaining if it was Eamon Holmes," I said. Well, she couldn't answer that, could she? She's the one who wrote an anonymous letter to Denzel to try and have West Side Story shut down. She begged him to cancel a production she claimed glorified gang violence and would give the young hoodlums of Strathbogie all the wrong ideas. Unfortunately, the dozy mayor had written a fan letter to Delia Smith earlier the same evening and somehow managed to put the letters in the wrong envelopes. As you can imagine, Delia was a mite confused, as she'd never even heard of Strathbogie and didn't see why the hell she should give a monkey's about its gang culture. While back at the theatre, poor Denzel had been asking around everywhere for a recipe for baked Alaska. You couldn't make it up.
Mrs. McSugal, Scotland's second finest actress, starred Carolyn Pickles. It was written by Jonathan Fortingall. Sound by Norman Goodman. Song title is Funky Disco by Biz Baz Studio. It was directed by Colin Wakefield and produced by Yellow Brick Grove in association with Double Honours Productions. Book available on Amazon. Mrs. McSugal is dedicated to Hannah Gordon, a truly fine Scottish actress.